going on, everyone? Welcome to the One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 22nd of June, 2021, and we are here today to recap another great week in sports, depending on who you talk to. On today's episode, we're going to lead off talking about the Philadelphia 76ers and where they go from here after their second round exit to the Atlanta Hawks. Then we're going to have a little fun in the baseball realm and discuss our all-star ballots as the Midsummer Classic is right around the corner. Just to start off, just wanted to drop our Twitter handles at the beginning in case you're looking. I'm at Noah Gillian. I believe Connor is at ConnorLav_ZG. And that is a good way to introduce our guest today. Connor, what is going on, my man? How are you doing today?
What's up, Noah? I've definitely been better. Not gonna lie about that one, but I'm here. I'm here, ready to talk.
I love it. I love it. So with that tone set, let's just get right into it. On Sunday, the Philadelphia 76ers, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, lost in seven games in the Eastern Conference semifinals to the Atlanta Hawks in what many people, Con, are calling the end of the so-called process. First off, as we kind of talk about this topic here, I guess we'll just get into the series first, and then we'll talk a little bit more micro level with the series, and then I did want to kind of get to more of a macro level and talk about the franchise and kind of where they've gone the last couple of years, just to get a little thing there. But let's just talk about the series right now and what went wrong. Obviously, the Sixers held a 2-1 lead after three games, after narrowly losing in game one, after the Atlanta Hawks hit 23 pointers, a franchise record for a single game in the playoffs. Sixers ended up only losing by four and then blowing them out in the next two games. And then the next two games after that, holding 20-point leads in each of Game 4 and Game 5, losing both of them by a combined score of 6 points. And then winning Game 6, losing Game 7. So, Con, a lot of blame going around this week. A lot of slander is being thrown around. But I wanted your opinion on it. What did you see? Who do you think deserves the most blame for the Philadelphia Sixers' so-called collapse in the second round?
Yeah, I think a collapse is a great word to describe it. I think no one's blameless in this entire on this entire team, really. I mean, you look at the MVP, Joel Embiid. I love him. Pretty much all of Philly loves him. He had a phenomenal year, his best year as a pro, an MVP season, and he's not blameless. I mean, you look at him, he had 8 turnovers in back-to-back games in game 6 and game 7. That's not what you need from your go-to guy. So he definitely could have been better, but obviously he's not the main person to blame. He's the one who got us there. He's the heart and soul of the team, as Daryl Morey said today in his press conference. I mean, he could have been better, yes. but he's not the sole person to blame, in my opinion. And I think most of Philadelphia is looking to these two guys. The two guys I'm blaming the most are Ben Simmons and Doc Rivers. I could talk about both of them at length for days. We can kind of go into each if you want to talk about it, but I guess I'll really start with Doc. And Doc's a great leader of men. And I think that's about all he is, because he's not a very good basketball coach. And it's not just this year. It's not like we're just realizing this year. I mean, he's done this in the playoffs previously. He's won one championship when he had a super team with Ray Allen, Kevin, the first super team ever. He won a champion. Congrats. Like, he had a great team. Like, and ever since then, he hasn't been a good coach. I mean, he didn't make adjustments. Dwight Howard got absolutely roasted in the pick. He couldn't guard the pick and roll. Joel was to Trae Young's credit, he's one of the best in the pick and roll in the entire league. He's no scrub. He knows how to get his shot off. He knows how to get the alley-oops to guys like Collins and Capella. But Embiid was the only one on the team who could even slow it down. Dwight Howard was getting cooked every time he went in, and Doc just continued to play him. Like, you got to make a change. George Hill, who was a guy who we signed at the end of the season, some veteran leadership. I kind of liked the signing when we brought him in, but the guy was non-existent this playoffs, and Rivers continued to put him in the game. I mean, we're talking about Brett Brown 2 years ago. I'm not saying Brett Brown is a better coach than Doc Rivers, but like, what is the difference right now? Like, we were calling for Brett Brown's head because his rotations suck and he couldn't make in-game adjustments. He couldn't do anything. He wasn't making Ben Simmons shoot. The same exact things are happening with Doc Rivers, who's this proclaimed great NBA coach. Like, what is the difference? What is the, like, I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's tough. Starting off with Doc, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. One of the things that I think pretty much defined this series was the Trae Young pick and roll. And just when Joel came off the court, I mean, it was night and day, because Dwight Howard, you know, an athletic center in his own right at what he does well, but that is not it. He does not defend very well on the perimeter and doing that stuff. And, you know, they just consistently every single time went to that play because they know it was nearly unstoppable for the Sixers. And, you know, that's one thing, you know, a lot of we had some holes at the trade deadline, and, you know, going out and getting a guy like George Hill, you know, he definitely fit a certain need of a ball handling lead guard who can shoot. But, you know, at some point you gotta go with what's working. And one of those things, you know, in my eyes early, you know, was Tyrese Maxey wasn't having the best game in game 7. You know, I know game 6 was good, and it's tough to trust a rookie. So that's where I'll give Doc a little bit of a blow there. Cut some slack off there. You know, George Hill did play 21 minutes, minus 15, like worst on the team. So then it's just like, it's tough to go anywhere there, but I agree. You know, he struggled with his rotations a lot there. You know, he rode his starters pretty heavily in this game outside of Furkan Korkmaz, which I did like. You know, I think he did have a little bit too long of a leash for his bench early in the series, which was a huge issue, because I think in game 1 was when we went to the all bench lineup, and that's when Atlanta went on about a 20-0 run.
Yeah, we didn't score the whole game.
And it just, there was no creation, there was no nothing. And, you know, still he had 5 people came off the bench in this game, but, you know, I just want to circle back around to the point you kind of made at the start. You know, Doc has been someone who, you know, comes in and is someone who's relatable, someone who's been in the big pressure moments, who's been around star players, knows how to connect with star players and egos. And I think he did tremendous with that this year. But you look at it, I believe I saw a stat from ESPN that there hasn't been a coach that's lost more games with a chance to clinch than Doc Rivers. And you just look, you just see stats like that. And I think, like we talk about it, I think Doc's a good coach. I think he's, you know, a great person, but, you know, there's certain coaches a la, you know, whoever you want, Greg Popovich, or, you know, sometimes Steve Kerr, you know, these coaches that make adjustments mid series that can, they realize what's going wrong and they know they only have 2 or 3 games to get it right, will make a change like that. So that's where I agree with you there. Doc's rotations and some of those things were tough. But yeah, like we kind of mentioned, he's not the only one that wears a little blame from this series. And I think the obvious name here is Ben Simmons. And I did want to talk about this a little bit now, because I was talking with some people over the last couple of days, and I think it's getting a little out of hand with Ben Simmons right now. I think the slander and the hate on Ben Simmons is getting a little bit out of hand, because let's just look at this from a season perspective. You got Ben Simmons receives 100 of a possible 100 first team votes for all defensive team, one of the elite premier perimeter interior, you know, all over defensive players in the league. Someone who, when he wants and, you know, has confidence, can score 16 a game. He's done it before. And, you know, someone who distributes the ball as well as anyone, something that Doc Rivers consistently went back to in press conferences throughout the year, defending him. You know, he just creates so many points from his assists and from the way he pushes the ball. And, yes, it's frustrating that when he's downhill and he's got a head of steam, it's frustrating when he doesn't go to the basket. And I'll be the first one to admit that. But the fact that he just all of a sudden, because of 7 games, has no value after what he's done in 4 years, I think is a little bit of a stretch. I still think he is a good player in the league and someone who could garner trade value. I'm not saying we don't trade him, but there is a little bit of a knee-jerk thing here, with which is always prevalent in Philly sports. We saw the same exact thing with Carson Wentz this last fall, someone who absolutely loses confidence and loses trust from the fans, the organization, the city. And, you know, it may take a change of scenery for Ben to get back to his, you know, full potential, but just the fact that he has no value right now is something that I just wanted to kind of go against, because, you know, he's proven what he is in this league. He might not be, and let's just frame it like this. He might not be what we thought he would be. You know, there's no way he is what we thought he could be, if that makes sense, but there's still value there. And I just kind of wanted to get that, you know, out first, Con, before I swing it to you, because, you know, whether we talk about a guy like, you know, some guys like Bradley Beal or CJ McCollum, you know, some of these Dame Lillard type creation perimeter guys, you know, people are telling me there's no way you could get CJ McCollum for Ben Simmons now. And I just think it's blasphemous. You know, I don't think it's totally accurate because of what Ben provides. He might not fit on the Sixers, but there's other teams that could use what he does well. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to get that there. And now I want to swing it to you, Con. Do you think I'm totally off base with that, or are you a little bit more in agreement?
I don't think you're off base when you're saying what he provides to the team. I mean, he's obviously still a good basketball player. Yeah. Like, yes, he's getting a ton of slander, some deserving and some undeserving. He's an elite defender. He's an all defensive first team player. He creates shots for everyone on the court. Creates some of the most 3-point opportunities of any player in the league. Like you said, that's valuable. That plays on just about any team. Now, what I don't agree with you is where you kind of said that you don't believe he can just like lose his value after 7 games or whatever. Like, we've seen this 4 years in a row. He can't get past the second round of the playoffs. He's a guy, we've seen that Ben Simmons is an elite defender. He's a good shot creator. He rebounds the basketball and he'll get your team to the second round of the playoffs. That's what he's going to do. So that's where his value is right now. And it's not getting any higher than that. And I don't see it ever going any higher, because he it's not even the jump shot. Like, obviously it is. Like, that's what's looming large, is that he won't even shoot the ball, but like, he's not even being aggressive. What, he shoot 5 shots in the fourth quarter?
In the last 4 games of the series, yeah, he did not attempt a fourth quarter shot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Only took four total in game 4. 7. Yeah. Yes. 2 for 4.
So like, he's not even looking to shoot the basketball in the playoffs. Like, he can't be a second option. He can't even really be a third option. He's making nearly $200 million and he's averaging 5 points a game in the playoffs. Like, that's just not going to cut it. Like, it's just not going to happen. Yaron Weitzman, are you familiar with him?
Yes.
He wrote Tanking to the Top. Which is an amazing book about the process. He covers things that people don't even realize or don't even know about. Like, it's a great book, but he just wrote an amazing article for Fox Sports yesterday about Ben Simmons. You should read it if you haven't. And the title of the article is "Ben Simmons Playoff Struggles Create Quandary for Philadelphia 76ers. And he explains the entire story of what happened to Ben, really, and how he's regressed in his shooting since he's been in the league. And he talks about basically what we just said, how he's still a very valuable player. He plays great defense. He does all these great things, but we've seen now that this is as far as Ben is going to be able to go with how he plays right now. And he's, whatever words you want to call it, stubborn/scared. He's scared to, I don't know. He's in his own head at this point. Like, it's a mental thing. And And I don't think he's going to change. I mean, he's been in the league 5 years and he's gotten worse every single offensively. He's gotten worse every single year, shooting the basketball, attacking. I mean, I don't see him changing. So yeah, his value is at an all-time low, but in my opinion, I don't want to really see him on this team anymore moving forward, just because it's not going to work. It's just not going
to
happen.
Yeah, I've been trying to, you know, kind of, I think we all have kind of, you know, try to make the Joel and Ben, you know, fit, I guess. We've been trying to make it work for a couple of years now, and, you know, we've been trying to talk ourselves into it. But, you know, it's just, you know, what's the thing when you do something over and over again, expect different results. It's, you know, it's literally insane about what's going on here. And I think the big thing with Ben Simmons is just the contract, because, you know, we just all talk, you know, we just talked about all the things he does well. You know, this is someone who last season made the All-NBA third team, you know, to All-Star back-to-back years, someone who, you know, has done a lot of things in this league already at the age of 24. But, you know, just look at his contract, $33 million next year, $35 million the next year, almost $38 million the year after that, then $40 million in the last year of his deal. Like, that's tough. You know, you're expecting a lot out of someone you give that much money to. And, you know, it could also change. You know, many people looked at the Chris Paul contract a couple years ago as one of the worst in the NBA. And, you know, obviously they're completely different players, but, you know, he's obviously providing a lot of value now. You know, I just think it's tough with Ben. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of different opinions there, but I think he is someone who potentially could use a change of scenery there, to, you know, to just get his confidence back up, because, you know, it was definitely hampered in this series.
Yeah, it was upsetting to watch, because, like, I'm reading this article, like, I just want to kind of read this little piece from this article, because it's just making me think, and things that I forget, like, because I've been, I don't know, there's a lot of games going on. We've been to the playoffs 4 years in a row now. Like, it says, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that Ben Simmons was bounding up to the foul line during playoff games and burying free throws. It's easy to forget, given everything that has happened to both him and the Sixers in the years since. This was back in April 2018, his rookie season and first postseason run. Sixers were facing the Miami Heat in the first round. Simmons made 7 of his 10 free throws in Game 1, and then he went 4 of 6 in Game 2, and an even better 7 of 8 in Game 3. He struggled in Game 4, going just 1 for 4 from the line, but in what seemed to be an encouraging sign, responded by going 6 for 7 in the series clinching victory in Game 5. Simmons regressed a little bit in the next round. Sixers fell to Boston Celtics in 5 games, but it was just year 1 of the Simmons Embiid partnership, and they'd already won a playoff series. A better future didn't just seem probable, it felt guaranteed. Simmons had even approached Embiid after the Sixers game 5 loss to the Celtics, held up his hand and said, there's going to be a lot of championship rings on this before we're done. And then he regressed from the free throw line every single year and got worse shooting offensively every single year. He was supposed to be working with a shooting coach that had helped him all that season. He had improved to 70.7% of his free throws in that 10 postseason games. If he's hitting 70% of his free throws in the postseason,
the series is over.
Like, what? Easy. And then that summer, after it ended, he told Brett Brown and the management he wasn't working with that shooting coach anymore. He's going to work with his brother, who's an assistant Division II coach at Colorado Christian University. He said he feels more comfortable working out with him. He'd rather do that than working out with that shooting coach. And ever since then, he's been worse.
Yeah, it's really just – I saw someone tweet something the other day. You know, Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz are two of the – you know, craziest stories we've had in the NBA over the last couple of years, and they somehow made it to the same team on back-to-back years. It's just, it's crazy to think there. So that kind of, you know, gets me into more of the macro level discussions we have here with the Philadelphia 76ers, Con. You know, what's next? Because Joel Embiid coming off a MVP caliber year, second team All-NBA, you know, he's a Jokic winning the MVP outside of being a first team All-NBA player. You know, someone who's going to be eligible for a supermax extension in the coming years, over $200 million, which, you know, it's a lot of money. Especially if they end up trading Ben Simmons and or Tobias Harris, you're going to have a $200 million Joel Embiid with a bunch of role players. And, you know, just to be fair here, you know, Joel definitely not the most, you know, durable player in the league. We all get that. We understand what he did in the playoffs as well, you know, playing on a torn meniscus, probably playing on another bum knee as well that he came back from in the, from the regular season. So I guess my question here is this something where you take the core of Toby, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, you know, you could throw Seth Curry in there, you know, Matisse Thybulle, Tyrese Maxey. Is this a core you hold together going into next year? Do you blow it up? You know, what in your mind, where do you think the Sixers go from here?
It's just so difficult because, like, we talked about how low Ben Simmons' value is right now. Like, it's literally as low as it has ever been since he's come into the league. But like I said before, I don't really want him on this team moving forward because I don't think we're able to win anything with this team. Like, I don't really think it matters who you put around Embiid, Simmons, and Harris. I don't think that that core three with Simmons playing how he is right now, and I don't see him changing that anytime soon, I don't think that that core three is good enough to win a championship. I think we've seen that the past 2 years. Like, so in my opinion, I think Ben and or Tobias have to be moved, and you've put other pieces around Joel Embiid. I mean,
You don't think you could get CJ McCollum for Ben Simmons?
Definitely not straight up. You need another pick, and you know Portland's saying, give us Maxey too. And, like, obviously Morey's not going to do that, but, like, like, you're not getting CJ McCollum with just Ben Simmons, and even, like, our first-round pick in Ben Simmons would be, like, a stretch for them. Like,
I could see Portland liking someone like Ben. Like, I could see them valuing them more than the Sixers because you got a guy like Damian Lillard who has the ball in his hand and creates someone who doesn't love to defend. So, you know, Ben's going to be picking up the lead ball handler, and you're not expecting Ben to do much. You have Nurkic down low who can, you know, do his own thing, but, you know, Ben is going to need to score for Portland to, you know, take a couple more steps. But I do think there's value for him in the league elsewhere, which is kind of my think. Like, you know, we could another team, you know, a team maybe like Golden State, where, you know, you've got two of the best shooters we've ever seen in Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. You had a guy like Ben Simmons who gets the ball off the rebound and can push. You know, that's something where, you know, Golden State could see a lot of value there too. And that's where I guess I'm kind of talking about with more Ben Simmons. I think there's teams where they value him more than the Twitter GMs, so to speak. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's, I guess that's where more I'm coming from with that point.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I just am not sure after, especially after watching that series, how many of those teams there are. Now, I am sure that there are some. I'm just like, is it five? Is it maybe 10? Like, I can't see it being much more than that. Like, that are willing to pay what Morey would want in return. Like, maybe five teams. Like, but, like, and then the question becomes, do they even have what we want back? Like, do we have to get a third team involved? And, like, that's possible, obviously, and could help us if we can get another team involved. But, like, it's just going to be difficult. And honestly, what helps me sleep at night with this team after that series is knowing that Daryl Morey is in control of our future. Like, thank the Lord. Holy.
Yeah, at least. At least you don't have a guy, I mean, Elton Brand still involved, obviously, and someone who is, you know, has shown the willingness to pull the trigger on a big deal. You know, it's good to have Daryl Morey. Let me ask you this. Just hypothetical here, Golden State. What if they offer a package of, among other pieces, Andrew Wiggins being one of the main pieces coming back for maybe a Ben Simmons type? You know, I'm trying to think, like we talked about Portland and CJ McCollum, you know, would that be, is that the level of player that you think would come back? Or do you think you couldn't even get someone on Andrew Wiggins level right now?
I think I
Because that's what I'm questioning right now. I think Ben is head and shoulders above Wiggins. I think
that's the level that people would be offering us, and I do not think we can accept that in return. I think McCollum is obviously better than Wiggins, and I think people will not be offering that. I think people will be offering stuff like Wiggins, but like we can't take that. Like I don't even want Ben on the team. I want to trade him, but I wouldn't be happy if we moved him for Andrew Wiggins. I mean,
yeah, I just like was Brogdon, thinking the names.
Like
Brogdon would be a good deal.
Apparently the Pacers have a lot of moving pieces. I was listening to a podcast, so
I would take Malcolm Brogdon. Definitely someone who is one of the better shooters in the league, threatens 50, 40, 90, I believe. Hasn't gotten there, obviously, but someone who's in that realm. We'll see. But that's
the other one, kinda, Zach LaVine, too. Like,
yeah, and then even there, I don't know if Chicago would, make that kind of move.
I feel like Ben fits there. Like,
yeah, I could see that for sure.
That's a little bit. Like, Vucevic plays on the outside. He can play in the dunker's role. He can play the point guard a little bit. Shoot. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I definitely think that's fair.
I trust Daryl, bottom line.
I agree. So I did want to get one more point from the Sixers. One of our good friends raised this point to me. Was the process a failure? And in my eyes, I think it looks to how you frame it. So I'll come to you first because you've definitely been through this through and through. Through the process, pretty much watched Michael Carter-Williams and Tony Roten out there for 82 games. So I'm going to come to you. Yes or no?
I have a complete quote from Derek Bodner's article. Uh-oh. And this is exactly the only answer to this question, in my opinion. The Sixers lost to the Hawks. The fourth consecutive season that they have failed to advance beyond the conference semifinals will lead a lot of takes over the coming days and weeks ahead, debating the merits of the process. In truth, Embiid, the star the Sixers tanked for, is the only reason this franchise is even remotely relevant. He's the superstar who covers up so many glaring deficiencies that he can almost single-handedly make you believe that the Sixers have a chance to win a championship, despite the supporting cast around him that you know deep down isn't up to the task. It is not the process that failed the Sixers. So far, it is the Sixers who have failed the process.
Excellent writing from Bodner. I did see that that article, read that one on The Athletic. I agree. I do think it is a little bit of how you frame it, though. Obviously, the goal for every team is winning a championship. That is the goal, win championships. But I do think, from Hinkie's point of view, he got as many first-round picks. I mean, I'm pretty sure they picked in the top 3-4 years in a row or whatever it might be, the top five. They just missed on drafting. I think it's tough when – And a draft in any sport is probably the toughest thing to do as, a team executive in anything. So I definitely think when you're looking at it as a whole, it is considered a failure because you're about to blow your team up after this without advancing past the semifinals. But I do think, they were right there with the amount of first round picks they had. Obviously, they did not know Markelle Fultz was going to struggle as much as he has. They didn't know Ben Simmons was going to plateau at this level of player. It's just tough, but I did want to kind of get that in because, it started off and it looked like a good success with the amount of picks that Hinkie was acquiring. But at the end of the day, you play the game to win.
Absolutely. You
play to win the game. Yeah. And
exactly. I'll just leave it with one other thing. And I didn't mean when I read that quote, and it probably comes off as that a little bit, like Joel Embiid's not perfect. Like he's not like,
no.
Sam Hinkie is not, that's not what I'm inferring. I'm not saying that it wasn't a failure. Like I completely agree with you. The process's goal was to win a championship, but like we got, and it was also to like, not be in mediocrity. That's what the goal of the process was to be. To be able to like be a legitimate championship contender and the process brought us Joel Embiid, who's a top 10 player in basketball, an MVP candidate. So, like, Yeah, we missed on some other picks. Markel Fultz, Jahlil Okafor. We missed on just about every other pick in
Evan
the top
Turner.
In the top five. Well, yeah, but like that was.
Yeah, that was a little bit pre.
Yeah.
No, I just. But look, yeah.
But like ahead. In the top five, we were missing on those picks other than Joel Embiid. And like we made some better picks later in the draft, whatever. But the process got us a top 10 player. It got us a number one seed. I'm not saying that was the goal of the process, but like, I don't know.
I don't think it was a dead failure. Kind of
like,
what
yeah,
saying.
Like we had the pieces in place. We missed on some picks. Like it wasn't mm-hmm. like, and then Embiid, like we failed him by putting bad pieces around him. Like we got an MVP guy and we should have gotten another one in the draft with all the stockpiled picks we had and we didn't, and all the cap space we had. And we failed that way. Like we yeah. failed once we had all the assets and everything.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely set up for success with the cap space, you said. And I did think you bring up an interesting point. You know, Joel Embiid is definitely not absolved of any blame here as well. You know, someone who has gotten a lot better, but, you know, there's some things in his game that, you know, he could always improve on. He said that at the end of the year. And that was one thing where you kind of learn a lot about your star players after a tough loss like that. Joel Embiid comes out after the game and says, you know, I improved a lot this year. There's a lot of things I did well, but I could still get better. You know, there's a lot of things that I can improve on. And then you look at your other star player. He comes out, Ben Simmons says, I am who I am. You know, I'm going to keep doing what I do and keep doing that. And it just, you know, it tells you a lot. I did want to kind of mention how that, you know, there's definitely some blame, you know, for Embiid. You know, we talked about some of our, you know, people we've talked to and, you know, some of the things that he doesn't do well. But at the end of the day, you know, he does what he's supposed to do on a day, you know, on a nightly basis. You know, in this era, it's tough to play through a big, and, you know, we've taken multiple chances at getting a lead ball handler with them. And, you know, the best chance they probably had was when Jimmy Butler was on the team. I think we can kind of, now that it might be blown up here, you know, there was a good chance here, but, you know, when you're struggling with the fifth seeded Atlanta Hawks, who at one point during the year were 14-20, and in that year, you take the eventual champion Toronto Raptors to game seven and are four bounces away from overtime. You know, I think it's definitely a conversation to be had, but that is a conversation for another day. Any last thoughts on 76ers season, con, the process in general? Any other things that you may not have gotten off your chest?
Yeah, I said a lot. I'm sure I probably rambled. Hopefully some people listen and don't think I'm crazy, but I trust in Daryl. We trust, and I wish Ben Simmons the best. I do not hate Ben Simmons. I just don't really want him to be a Sixer anymore. I hope he goes to another team and wins Defensive Player of the Year and averages 10 assists and has a good career being what he wants to be. But I hope he's not a Sixer. Yeah.
All righty. And that is going to wrap up our lead topic today. 76ers will wrap up their season and head into an offseason full of questions. But now that kind of sets the stage for the rest of the NBA season and also the Major League Baseball season to take full center of attention of the media. Obviously, the NHL playoffs are still going on. They're getting close to the Stanley Cup final. But the Midsummer Classic All-Star Game for Major League Baseball is right around the corner. So me and Connor wanted to have a little bit more fun after the depressing start to the episode and kind of raise the spirits up a little bit and talk about some All-Star ballots. Currently, they're in the first phase of voting right now, which ends June 24th in a couple of days, and then they'll vote for the starters next week. So we just kind of wanted to go through, we'll start off kind of talking each one of our position, starters who we kind of have here. We have some debates among the players, and then we'll talk about the pitching staffs, which Connor prepared for us here, and we'll go kind of back and forth, but let's start in the American League con. And, obviously we'll start at first base, and I don't think there's really anything to discuss here. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is my starter. Is he yours as well?
Oh my gosh. I'm in love with this guy. I'm having a bromance with him. I have him in two of my three fantasy leagues. He's a triple crown threat this year mm-hmm. right now. So, yeah, I'm rooting for Vlad. Love him. Yeah, definitely.
I believe, if I am not mistaken here, is currently leading all all triple crown categories, depending on whether or not Adalberto Mondesi has enough at bats to qualify for the title. He has a 361 average. You know, he's up there, but other than that, Vladimir Guerrero is, I believe, leading the league in home runs. You know, leading the league in RBIs. Yeah, I think
Brantley is hitting 350. Brantley just hits the crap out of the ball.
Great call. Great call. Yeah. And Byron Buxton hitting 369, which very nice average there. But, you know, he's also missed some games there. But, you know, Vladdy. No, he's going to start first base, probably going to be one of the lead vote getters there. So I don't think there's too much to discuss there. Yep. And that's going to bring us to second base, where there is a little bit more of a discussion to be had here, Khan. So I'll swing it to you first and get your starter, and we'll see if we differ here.
Yeah, for me, it's between two guys. And I think the one will probably win because the other one's hated. a guy who's having an awesome season is Marcus Semien of the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, he's hitting 283. He's got power with 18 homers. I mean, he's always shown a little bit of power, but he could hit 20 homers before the All-Star break. He's got an 878 OPS. He's having a great season. That Blue Jays lineup is, if they get all things clicking, they can be a pretty scary lineup. And then the other guy who I started to foreshadow is Jose Altuve, who I don't know if it's necessarily quiet, but he's having a phenomenal year. He's also hit 16 home runs, just under 40 RBI. He's hitting just under 300 with almost a 900 OPS on an Astros team that looks pretty good. So do I like Altuve? I guess I shouldn't say yes, but he's having a great year. So it's between the two of them for me. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's definitely those two are kind of at, you know, the lead. There's not really anyone super, super close. I mean, before the year, you might have said DJ LeMahieu, but he came out really cold. Has heated up of late, but I don't think there's anyone in their realm right now between Semien and Altuve. I am going to give it to Semien just off the rip, although Altuve is hitting the ball very, very well and someone who deserves to be in the conversation. So I definitely wanted to you know, kind of have him there, someone who, you know, in terms of, you know, leaderboard is actually leading the second base position this year in expected weighted on base average, which is obviously, you know, kind of takes a lot of things into account with the quality of contact they have as well as, you know, speed and everything. So there's some things there, but, you know, someone who's absolutely cranking the ball right now. But yeah, I'm going to give it to Marcus Semien. And I think he deserves it for what he's done. So that's two Blue Jays we have so far at first and second base.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, once they get George Springer back, you know, they haven't had him all year and they're still raking. So he's definitely someone who is in the conversation. And that is going to bring us now to third base in the American League. A lot of good candidates here. A lot of players who have been mashing. I think there is one leader, however, though, and that is Rafael Devers of the Boston Red Sox. You know, there's a couple other options. I'll let you bring a couple of them up, but I think Rafi Devers is definitely, you know, worthy of the spot. Someone has 18 homers, 57 ribbies, 913 OPS, just, you know, tearing the cover off the ball for a rejuvenated Red Sox team who, if you listen to our MLB preview episode before the season, we actually were very high on the Red Sox and their bounce back potential this year. So, you know, we got a guy like Devers, who's just one of the best hitters in the league. You know, it makes it a lot easier. So I think Devers is going to start. Do you agree with me there, Con?
Yeah, definitely. He's a stud for that Red Sox team. He's going to be there for a while, ideally for them. And yeah, he's roping the ball. He's having a really great year, I think. He should definitely be the starter. After that, you got a guy in Jose Ramirez who just hits the ball year in and year out. He gets the job done. He'll be a reserve if I had to guess. And I mean, Bregman's looked okay, but he just got hurt again and he's going to be out for a little while. So he's missed some time already, but he's been productive when he's been on the field. But yeah, I think it's definitely Devers.
Definitely. You know, another guy, Yoan Moncada, currently third in voting. You know, hasn't put up crazy numbers this year, but someone who's definitely around that. So definitely wanted to mention his name in the discussion there. And that is going to bring us to shortstop here. And another one where there's some questions. There's some questions to be had. And I think there's kind of three names at the top here. And I'll bring them up real quick. And then if you have any others, I think Xander Bogaerts definitely deserves to start, hitting 317, 13 homers, 42 ribbies, 931 OPS. I think he deserves to start. But two other players in Carlos Correa and Bo Bichette, I think, are also up there in the voting. So out of those three, Con, who do you think deserves the nod?
Yeah, all three of them look really, really good. But I think I'd either have to give it to Xander or Correa. I think Correa's had a really, really good year for that Astros team. I mean, I feel like we've been talking about all the same teams for these infield positions. I feel like it's been like the Astros, Blue Jays, Red Sox. Like, but yeah, I think I will give the edge to Xander. I mean, he's got the edge in average. He's got the edge in OPS. Yeah, he looks good. Yeah, look, I wouldn't be mad about a Red Sox left side, Blue Jays right side of the infield to start the All-Star game.
Yeah, I think that's definite, a definite possibility. And, you know, they're just absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. Like I mentioned with Devers, Bogaerts has been instrumental in their resurgence to, you know, really compete in the AL East, especially with the Yankees kind of struggling out of the gates. So, yeah, like you mentioned, we have Vladdy, Marcus Semien, Blue Jays right side, along with Devers and Bogaerts, Red Sox left side. And that's going to take us to the home plate area of the diamond in the catcher position. And there's only really one real candidate here, Con, for me, and that is Salvador Perez of the Kansas City Royals. 292, 18 homers, 47 ribbies, leading the catcher position in OPS. I mean, there's no one that really comes close to what he's doing so far.
Yeah, you got to like this guy. How can you not? I mean, how old is he? I'm looking this up right now, but it seems like he's just been doing this for so long, man. I mean,
someone who 2 years ago tore his ACL, came back in the shortened 2020 year and absolutely crushed it, and is continuing his dominance.
He's a six-time All-Star, a five-time Gold Glover, a three-time Silver Slugger. He won the World Series with the team in 2015. Oh, and he was the World Series MVP that year too.
He's got a case.
He's only 31. I mean,
He's got a good amount of years left.
He does this a little bit longer. He'll probably find his way in. Yeah.
He'll be in consideration for Cooperstown, definitely. Yep. Someone who's been dominating. Yep. I agree. So I don't think we have any, you know, anything to discuss there. And that's going to bring us to the outfield position. Now here we're taking three starters, so there is going to be a lot more discussion here, a lot more players involved. So let me get your starters real quick. Your top three. I'll give kind of my top three, and then we'll discuss some guys who you know could also be in consideration there. So let me get yours.
You go first. I don't know. I have too many names. Right. I didn't even write it in by
starter. Like, you just starters. Have names.
I just
okay.
I have like 10 outfielders.
So with, yeah. Here's what I'm gonna kind of go with. So I got Byron Buxton. I think he deserves to be starting. Someone who missed a lot of time, but has came back and pretty much picked up right where he left off. So I'm going to go with Byron Buxton as a potential center fielder. Aaron Judge, I believe, starts in right field, 280, 15 homers, 36 ribbies. You know, had a little injury as well. So he's been, you know, tearing the cover off the ball, hitting really well. And then, like, there's a lot of options, but I like Cedric Mullins. I think he definitely needs to be in consideration for starting in the outfield. I also like Mike Trout. I mean, that guy, remember him? Like, I think he would probably start if he came back at all before the All-Star break, but I don't think he'll start. I think he'll make the roster as a formality and then someone will replace him because he's Mike Trout. But I think my starters, Buxton, Judge, and Mullins, but there is a lot more names that we can go into and discuss. So, yeah, start giving me some names.
I like it. Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, I love Mullins. I think he'll definitely be an All-Star, whether it's a starter or a reserve. He'll be on the team. I agree. Judge and Buxton are both going to make the team. Trout as well. Then we get into some other names. I mean, another Oriole, like Trey Mancini, is quietly having a good season. He could be in consideration. A guy from Oakland who it seems like has been undervalued is Mark Canha. He like is top five in the league and runs scored quietly. Kyle Tucker from Houston has missed some time, but still gets the job done whenever he's on the field. Austin Meadows has been good for the Rays. And then another thing you might want to consider, because another all teams have to be represented, is Adolis Garcia from the Rangers, who's come up out of nowhere, and he's hitting 270. He's got 18 home runs and over 800 OPS. I mean, yeah, he could be in consideration when you're looking at the fact that you got to have a representative from each team. So
yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a good call. Couple other names, Ramon Laureano, my boy. You know, doing it on both sides of the field, 12 home runs. I believe he has 10 steals as well, maybe nine, doing his thing. Alex Verdugo hitting 289 for the Red Sox, nine homers, 32 ribbies, 800 OPS. Pretty much the crown jewel along with Jeter Downs of the Mookie Betts trade, and someone who's performing, you know,
Haniger. Yeah.
Yep. Haniger, Randy Arozarena, also someone who could potentially be in consideration there. But there's a lot of names here, Con.
Teoscar, too.
Teoscar Hernandez. Currently, Teoscar's currently fifth in the voting right now.
Yeah, I think he'll 300. Probably.
Yeah. I mean, Blue Jays are going to have a lot of representatives, and rightfully so. So that kind of wraps our outfield discussion up. Yeah, so there's a lot of names there. Also, American League has a DH. There's no question about it. It's Shohei Ohtani. Like, there's no question about it.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
You have anything to say about Shohei real quick while we're talking?
There's nothing to say. There's not. It speaks for itself. Just have fun. Enjoy watching him. That's all I have to say, because I'm enjoying it. Yordan Alvarez mashes the ball, though. He might make it as a reserve.
So. Also wanted to mention JD Martinez and Nelson Cruz. Two guys just rake every single year. The definition of a designated hitter. Just go back to Shohei real quick. 272 average, 23 homers, 54 RBIs, over a 1,000 OPS. You know, he's right there with Vladdy for AL MVP. So I think there's going to be a big race for that award coming down to it. So that's going to wrap up our American League talk here. And we're going to switch over to the National League, where there's a little bit more of some discussions to be had. So I'm really excited to get into this. And we're going to do the same kind of format we did for the American League and start at first base. So here, Con, there's a discrepancy in my opinion and how the voting is going on so far. I'm going to give the nod to Freddie Freeman, currently hitting 242, not great, 16 homers, 40 ribbies, and 811 OPS. But currently the leader in votes is Max Muncy. So how do you kind of see this breaking down?
Yeah, I think Muncy's had a really – really good year quietly. He's only hitting 264, but he's got a 418 OBP. So that guy walks like he's one of the best. He is one of the best plate disciplines in all of baseball. Can't really ignore what he's doing, but I've always been a Freddie Freeman guy. I mean, I think he gets the nod. Muncy's actually been out for the past week or so. I mean, he hasn't missed a ton of time, but he's missed some games this season already. So I think I would give Freddie the nod just because, I mean, he's the household name. It's not like he's having a poor year. He's still getting the job done. I think I agree with you. But I could see Muncy being the starter, I guess, because he is having a solid season as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, someone who has over 50 points higher than the next candidate in OPS, more than 50 points, the more than Brandon Belt in the OPS statistic there. You know, Anthony Rizzo, another guy who's right around there. Got to talk about our boy Reese. Currently has the second most home runs of any first baseman in the National League right now, 15, right behind Freddie, 16. But, you know, I think it's pretty much Freddie, Muncy. And then, there's discussions to be had about some other guys there. But I think we both agree that Freddie is more than likely going to get the nod, especially with I can't even say that. The Dodgers are definitely performing better than the Braves right now. But, you know, we definitely respect Freeman and what he's done so far in his career. Obviously, it's a one-year award, but starting nod for the All-Star. whatever. I'm rambling a little bit. We're going to go with Freddie Freeman. And that's going to bring us to the second base position. So here there's a little bit of discrepancy here because I have a guy potentially starting who's not even in the top three right now in votes. So let me get your starter, Con, and then we'll kind of discuss some other options.
What do you have, Deuce?
Yeah. He's right All there, right. dude.
No, he is having a solid year, but Albies is having a good year. I think he's coming in first, I believe, if I'm saying it in the votes so far. He's definitely doing well. I mean, he's showing a little bit of power with 11 homers. He's got 45 runs driven in. So he's definitely helping that Atlanta team that's struggling a little bit. I think another guy that could be in consideration is Adam Frazier from the Pirates. When you're talking about kind of the same situation as Adolis Garcia in the American League, where you kind of got to get the Pirates guy in. I mean, he's hitting 322. I'm pretty sure he's top five in the league in hits, total hits. So I think Frazier could be in consideration. And then, yeah, I think my third guy after that would be Ryan McMahon, who I think you were referencing is going to be your starter from Colorado. I'll let you speak on him a little more. He's definitely having a solid season. He's hitting for some power from that left side of the plate. He is in Coors Field, so that may be a little bit why I'm down on him. But yeah, I think he's deserving to make the team. Yeah.
Yeah. So third right now in votes in the National League is Gavin Lux. I love Gavin Lux, but he's not having the best year right now. 697 OPS really isn't getting it done. But Dodger, so he's going to get that boost there. I think it is going to end up being Albies, someone who's stealing bases, hitting for power now after an early season slump. But like you said, with Adolis Garcia and Frazier, I think you can use the same argument for Ryan McMahon a little bit here. Someone who's hitting 256, 16 home runs, leading the position, 44 ribeyes, and an 816 OPS, fifth at the position in OPS. I think that he's got a good chance. He can also play all over the infield, so he could be a utility guy on the bench. You know, I think he's definitely going to make it for the Rockies, but definitely someone I think needed to be discussed about for starting. Also, our boy, Mean Gene, leading the NL in OPS, leading the NL or second in the NL in average at the position. Someone who just went down, but was one of the hotter hitters in baseball when he did get hurt. So we had to include him there because he's got a chance to potentially make a reserve spot. But I think we both agree that it's probably going to be Albies and, another whole right side of the infield that is dominated by one team in the Atlanta Braves. And that's going to bring us to the third base position. And now here is where we have some interesting discussions that need to be had, Con. So I'll let you start it off. Let me know who you have starting, and then we'll start going through some names here.
Yeah, definitely. There's a ton of good candidates here at third base. I think I'm leaning towards Nolan Arenado here. He's second in the voting right now behind Chris Bryant, who's definitely having a solid year for the Cubs, a guy who's been kind of inconsistent over the past few years since his MVP season, where he was just an absolute beast. But he's picked it up this year for sure. I think he's right there too, but I'm going to give the edge to Nolan. I think this is a guy who people had some questions about once he was moving from Colorado. They wanted to kind of see how he was going to translate. They knew the glove would, but they wanted to see how he was going to hit. I mean, he's come in pretty good. He's got over 800 OPS. He's still hitting some homers. His average is pretty high. I think I'm going to give the edge to Nolan here on this one. I'm impressed with him. I'm not impressed. It's not that I didn't think he'd do well, but I think he's definitely lived up to what people wanted from him coming from Colorado.
Yeah. Nolan has been doing very, very well for the Cardinals. One of the main reasons they're doing well this year. Also, Justin Turner, another name currently third in voting, is a Dodger. So he has a little bit of that boost, but still hitting very well, doing Justin Turner things so far. Another name I wanted to bring up, Manny Machado, definitely in consideration there. Not having as good a power year as some of the other guys, only a couple home runs behind some of the leaders at the third base position. But still, driving in a ton of runs, tied with Arenado for the lead at third base, just under a tick under 800 OPS, you know, definitely someone that needs to be in the conversation, has probably has a good chance to make a reserve spot. Another guy, Eduardo Escobar, hitting 240, 15 home runs, leading the position, 45 ribeyes and a 743 OPS. You know, same thing with your Adolis Garcia thing, a Diamondback who may be the worst team in the league right now. And they might get an all-star. You know, Zach Allen's been hurt, so I don't know if they were going to put him as all-star. They might put Ketel Marte. But Eduardo Escobar is definitely someone who needs to be in the conversation. But my starter is Chris Bryant. I think he's really had a good resurgence this year and has really shown people that MVP form that he had only a couple years ago, still a young guy in this league. So there's definitely a lot more conversation to be had at the third base position, but you know, I don't think you can go wrong either way. So that's going to bring us to shortstop. And I don't want to spend too much time here, Khan, because I think we can all agree who is going to be starting, the cover boy himself, Fernando Tatis Jr.
Absolutely. He's been just incredible. I mean, yeah, there's not much else to say about him. One thing I do want to point out is I'm seeing second and third in the voting are Javi Baez, who, yeah, he's hitting for home runs, but he strikes out at nearly like a 40% clip. And then Corey Seager, who is great, but he's been out for I don't know how long. And then there's a guy who's Trey Turner, who's been playing the whole season. He's hitting 313, and he's not even in the top three in voting. So Trey Turner is a clear second for me in the National League shortstop voting. I'm not really sure why Seager and Javi Baez are ahead of him, but I did not agree with that.
Yeah, I think shortstop in the National League is probably the most stacked position. Maybe outfield is definitely up there, but the shortstop position, I mean, you look at names like Fernando Tatis Jr., Trey Turner, Corey Seager, Trevor Story, Javi Baez, a guy in Francisco Lindor, who's having a cold year, but is now in the Big Apple.
Crawford's having a good year.
Yep. Brandon Crawford having a great year, 16 homers, 48 ribeyes. He's still hitting 250, 873 OPS. He is up there. I think Kevin Gausman is probably going to be the Giants representative, but the Giants are leading the NL West at this point of the year. So they might get two all-stars. I wanted to mention in the third base, Evan Longoria also having a great year. But Brandon Crawford is having a tremendous year. I'm happy you mentioned him. And there's just a lot of options here. I mean, Eugenio Suarez for the Reds is hitting 176, but has 15 bombs and 42 ribbies. I believe
just traded for him.
Yeah. I believe the projection system, the bat. I don't know if you've ever heard of that projection system on Fangraphs, actually has him projected for the most home runs for the remainder of the season at 28. So, you know, someone who is a prime positive regression candidate, to use a little bit of an oxymoron there, but you know, someone who's definitely doing well. I definitely wanted to mention him. Trevor Story having a little bit colder of a year, so you know, he might be the Rockies representative as well. You never know, but I agree, it's Tatis that's starting. Trey Turner should be the number two option there, and then honestly I'd put Brandon Crawford number three just based on what they've done this year. That brings us to the catcher position now, Khan, and I think there's really only two. Actually, there's not. There's a couple here, but I think between you and me, there's really only two candidates here, between Buster Posey and JT Realmuto. Buster Posey is right back to his MVP form, hitting 329, 12 homers, 26 ribeyes, 983 OPS. And JT Realmuto is the best catcher in baseball. So who do you give the nod, biases aside?
Oh, it's definitely Buster Posey. I don't know if Buster Posey woke up and thought it was 2012. or what, but he looks like he's like 6 years younger right now, and he hasn't really slowed down. So yeah, I think it's clearly Buster. And then I do have JT second, but I think people are gonna maybe go with Yachty. I think he's definitely the third guy. He's having a great year. He thinks it's 2012 too. I mean, he's got seven bombs already. He's throwing guys out on 75 mile per hour curveballs from his knees. I mean,
yep.
I can't like be upset if Yadier makes it over JT. I mean, I will be, but not at Yadier, just upset in general. So
yeah,
I think Buster's got to be the starter though.
Wilson Contreras currently third in voting, and you know, he's having a good power year, but not someone who I think is quite on JT's level. So I think it would be Buster, JT, or Yadi for that. And that's going to take us to the outfield. And this one is a little bit more cut and dry, I believe, than the American League here. I'll just name these guys right off the rip, and then we can have some names. Ronald Acuna Jr., no doubt about it, starting in center field for the National League. And then two Cincinnati Reds are going to be on the corners, I believe. Jesse Winker, Frank Tatelian, shout out. And Nick Castellanos. Winker currently hitting 335 with 17 bombs and 43 RBIs over a 1,000 OPS. And Nick Castellanos started the year absolutely on fire, still hitting 341 with 13 homers, 38 RBIs, and a 977 OPS. So any objections with the starters there, Con?
Yeah, not really. I think Betts might get it just because he's a household name. He hasn't been awesome, but he's also hasn't been bad either. So I think maybe Betts over like one of the two Reds guys, just because that's how the MLB is sometimes. But I completely agree that Winker and Castellanos are more than deserving, both of them. And I agree with Acuna, obviously. Get into some other names, I guess. Like I said, definitely Mookie. I think Bryce and Soto are two names that are probably going to make it in his reserves. I know Bryce has been a little inconsistent, but I mean, he's shown flashes too. His numbers aren't awful overall. So I think he can make it. A guy from the Dodgers who could make it really in the infield or outfield, I think he's got to make it, is Chris Taylor. He's having a phenomenal season for them. Really, really helping step up with all the injuries that have come across that team. Another guy from Colorado who I really like this year is Ramel Tapia. He's having a phenomenal year. He's hitting 306. He's got 8 stolen bases. I think he's a sleeper for that Rockies team that might need a representation. Like McMahon, him or McMahon, I think, are kind of the top two for them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple other names just to mention. Guys having good years. Brian Reynolds of the Pittsburgh Pirates, 299, 12 homers, 36 RBIs. Tyler O'Neill of the St. Louis Cardinals, hitting 276 with 15 bombs and 34 RBIs. You know, Ketel Marte and Starling Marte both hitting over 320. Ketel's hitting 361, also dealt with an injury. But, you know, just some other names to bring up. Just, you know, who could potentially make it interesting in that discussion. And, of course, it is the National League, so there are no DH spots here. I think we are going to talk pitchers on the next edition of the episode, just because we're running a little bit long here now, and we are they haven't decided on the pitchers quite yet. There has been some injuries, so we are going to wait a little just to let the ballot kind of set itself up a little bit better. But we will be back to discuss some pitchers for the All-Star game, because I think we can all agree I'm really looking forward to it. Really looking forward to the Home Run Derby, Con. I don't know if you saw Shohei Ohtani is in the field this year. And yeah, as we're kind of making our way off the pod, Con, let me get some other names that you're looking forward to maybe being in the Home Run Derby this year in Coors Field, where the ball absolutely jumps.
Have they only announced Ohtani, or have they announced other candidates?
I've only seen Ohtani because he announced it. Like, he came out and said he's going to do it, but I haven't seen any other guys yet. But, you know,
I mean, I think Winker would be a fun one to see in it for sure. I saw that Vlad said he wasn't going to do it. I think Matt Olson would be a fun one. He's going to hit a lot of bombs. Adolis Garcia would probably go out there and swing for the fences. Schwarber, Jared Walsh, Javi Baez, guys like that, maybe.
Austin
guys
Riley.
Big swingers. Nelson Cruz, Austin Riley, Adam Duvall. Yeah. McMahon at home.
McMahon. I think they will
he
have
could
McMahon
go crazy.
In there.
Yeah.
Chuck Nasty, maybe.
I don't want Reese.
Reese already done it once, so I don't think he will. Maybe a guy like Yordan. Yordan Alvarez, Franmil Reyes. Like I said, we're really looking forward to the All-Star game this year. Don't know exactly the date of it yet. I don't know if I'm going to pull that up real quick just so we can get that for the show. It will be July 13th. So we are coming up on it, Con. We are coming up quick on the All-Star game this year. But with that, that is going to wrap up the show today. Just to put a bow on it, please hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed what we talked about today. Also, if you enjoyed the podcast as a whole, please leave a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to. Would really mean a lot and would help the podcast reach new audiences. Only takes a couple seconds just to reach down and click that 5-star if you enjoyed. If you want to follow us on social media, please check the description below. I mentioned my account is at Noah Gillian. Connor is at ConnorLav_ZG. And I hope you all enjoyed, and I can't wait to see you back here again next time. Thank you, Con, for hopping on. It was a pleasure as always.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yep. And glad to vent about the Sixers. Yeah, had to get that out.
Yes, sir. A lot of people were looking forward to it, so we had to give the people what they want. But for Connor Laverty, I am your host, Noah Gillian. But hey, this is just one man's opinion.